The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles mostly from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first article is a review of deep vein thrombosis. In other words, deep vein blood clots. And it talks about stopping blood clots in the legs and lungs. Whether it's getting you up and walking soon after a surgical procedure, or advice to periodically walk around the plane during a long flight, the primary goal is the same: preventing the development of blood clots in the deep inner veins of the legs, a condition called deep vein thrombosis. Deep vein thrombosis is a common problem, and complications from these clots can include long-lasting leg discomfort and disability, or even a life-threatening condition where a blood clot blocks blood flow from the heart to the lungs. Sometimes DVT is provoked by well-known causes. Remember, DVT is deep vein thrombosis. DVT also occurs for no known reason, though underlying risk factors may be present. Whether DVT is provoked or not, awareness of symptoms can help you promptly seek care, which is important to avoid or minimize significant complications. DVT most often develops in the deep leg or pelvis veins. These veins are the larger conduits of oxygen-depleted blood that funnels back to the heart. From there, blood is pumped to the lungs, where it once again becomes oxygen-rich. Most people who develop DVT are at risk of blood clots. The first risk is age and lifestyle factors. Older age, obesity, and smoking will increase the risk. Then there are medical factors. These include a past DVT or pulmonary embolism history, use of hormone therapy or oral contraceptives, in other words, birth control pills with estrogen, heart failure, a high risk of heart disease, and cancers, especially pancreatic cancer, brain, lymph node, and lung cancer. Inflammatory disease like inflammatory bowel disease and rheumatoid arthritis also increase risk. Then there are genetic factors. There's numerous inherited conditions that increase clotting risk. And having a family history of DVT or blood clot, especially if they occur before age 50 and without a reason, can be an indicator. In addition to predisposing factors, certain events can provoke a DVT. Even after the event, the risk of DVT may remain heightened for several months. Provoking events might incur COVID-19 infection. This infection increases the risk of clotting if hospitalization is required. Then any condition that causes long periods of immobilization or bed rest. Inactivity slows blood flow. Airplane flights over 6 to 8 hours can mildly increase the risk of clots. And then there's trauma or major surgery. These may increase risk depending on the type of injury or the surgery and its duration. Leg, hip, or pelvis fracture and orthopedic procedures like knee and hip replacement particularly increase clotting risk. The symptoms of a blood clot are not always clear. DVT can develop and grow unnoticed. Still, symptoms eventually occur in most people, typically in just one leg. These symptoms may include swelling in that leg, leg pain, cramping, or a pulling sensation that often begins in the calf but can occur in the thigh, warmth or redness over the affected area, especially if a superficial vein close to the skin is also involved. There may be increased prominence of leg veins. It's critical to get symptoms checked out, even though only about 10 to 25% of people with these symptoms actually have DVT. That's because a lot of other health problems cause the same symptoms. Reaching a diagnosis often involves using a risk factor scorecard and blood testing. Ultrasound imaging of the leg is safe, widely available, and often decisive. Additional imaging or blood testing may be done to aid in diagnosis, identify the root cause of the clotting, or determine the optimal therapy. The goals of DVT therapy are to stabilize existing clots and prevent them from growing larger, prevent new clots from forming, and reduce the risk of complications. This is typically done with blood-thinning drugs called anticoagulants. Anticoagulants don't dissolve clots, but they prevent clots from growing and reduce the risk of further clot-related problems, while blood enzymes dissolve the existing clots over weeks to months. Some of these anticoagulants are apixaban or Eliquis and rivaroxaban or Xarelto. These drugs can be started right away and used alone. Other drugs include warfarin or Coumadin, dabigatran or Pradaxa, and edoxaban or Savesa, and these medications can be started after a few days of injections of a fast-acting anticoagulant drug called Lovenox or enoxaparin. If your bleeding risk is too high to use anticoagulants, or if they're not working, a clot-trapping filter may be placed in the large vein in your abdomen. This reduces the risk of clot fragments reaching the lungs. If a DVT causes severe symptoms that may compromise blood flow into and out of the leg, a tube can be guided through a small incision to the DVT. Then a drug is released through the tube to dissolve the clot, or the clot is removed mechanically. How long should you keep taking these drugs? Well, sometimes this is fairly clear. Most people take an anticoagulant for at least 3 months. That typically provides enough time for the body to dissolve existing blood clots. After that, your medical team will assess your risk of developing another DVT. The typical duration of anticoagulant use will be different depending on the situation. For example, if you have an active cancer or ongoing inflammatory bowel disease, you'll probably be treated with anticoagulants for a longer period, or perhaps indefinitely, depending on the situation. There are two things that sometimes happen with DVT. One is called post-thrombotic syndrome. This can occur when a deep vein clot causes damage to the one-way valves in the leg veins, or a DVT may not fully dissolve, leaving residual blockage. This can cause the blood to pool in the legs, leading to leg swelling. Edema can be uncomfortable, and without treatment, it can lead to skin problems and difficult-to-heal sores. Post-thrombotic syndrome occurs in about 30% of people with DVT who receive proper anticoagulation. Well-fitted compression stockings worn anytime you are upright, often for life, are the main treatment. Wearing compression stockings when DVT initially develops does not prevent post-thrombotic syndrome. The second thing that sometimes happens from DVT are pulmonary embolism. From the deep veins of the legs, it's only a straight shot to the heart, and only a short distance from there to the lungs. If clot fragments break loose from a DVT, they can be carried to the lungs, blocking blood flow. This is called a pulmonary embolism. If it's big enough, it's fatal. Symptoms of pulmonary embolism vary. Many people have no symptoms or only mild or vague symptoms. In fact, symptoms of DVT may be the first clue of also having a pulmonary embolism. However, sudden and alarming symptoms can occur. These symptoms might include unexplained shortness of breath, which can come on suddenly or gradually, sharp chest pain, especially when taking a breath or coughing, a feeling of lightheadedness or dizziness. Sometimes a person can even experience fainting. A rapid or irregular heart rate, clammy or bluish skin, or excessive sweating. In people diagnosed with DVT and properly treated, activity and moderate exercise do not increase pulmonary embolism risk. In fact, activity may even be helpful for the body's natural process of dissolving a clot. Now, here's a kind of an interesting side article, and it says, before your next surgery that involves sedation, your healthcare team might ask if you brushed your teeth. It's not a comment on your breath. The team is trying to reduce your risk of pneumonia. About 1 in 100 people who are in the hospital will get pneumonia, which is an infection of the lungs. Getting pneumonia in the hospital extends hospital stays and increases the need for antibiotics. It's also a leading cause of death among people who are critically ill. People who require respiratory support from a machine are at even higher risk of pneumonia because the machine's tubes can harbor bacteria. Oral care before surgery is one way to cut down the risk of pneumonia. Germs in your mouth can travel to your lungs and cause pneumonia. If you're going to have surgery, there's some important oral care that you should think about. First of all, you should brush your teeth twice a day and floss at least once a day. This is especially critical before surgery. You also should get dental care every 6 months. People who have dental checkups in the 6 months before major medical procedures have a lower rate of pneumonia. You should also care for your dentures if you have them. Clean your dentures with antibacterial soap and water, and brush your gums with an extra soft toothbrush. Arrive at the hospital with your dentures out. One study found that when people in the hospital brush their own teeth or have a member of their care team brush them, rates of hospital-acquired pneumonia fall 37%. Keep up regular brushing and flossing during your recovery period when you return home. Now here is a useful article, again in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and it's entitled Healthy Holiday Eating. Healthy eating during the holidays can seem like an impossible assignment. From Thanksgiving onward, many families are inundated with family gatherings and holiday parties featuring fatty dishes, plentiful desserts, and free-flowing alcohol. Jennifer Welper, a wellness executive chef at the Mayo Clinic, has tips to help you navigate the holidays in a healthier way. But she's not interested in forbidding cookies or throwing out grandma's beloved casserole recipe. It's part of life. People come together over food. You want to make sure that you don't completely strip holiday dishes of what they're meant to be. Still, Chef Jen has strategies to make sure you don't feel sluggish, overfed, and sugared out over the holidays. Holiday spreads tend to be laden with savory, creamy, and fatty foods. Add something light and fresh, like a lightly dressed salad, a fancy fruit plate, or vinegar-based slaw, and you may be surprised how quickly those lighter dishes are snatched up. You might still feel very full later, but what's inside of your stomach is not going to be as heavy, she says. When it comes to appetizers, you can still offer chicken wings or meatballs, but also offer lighter dishes like veggie platters, lettuce wraps, or fresh black bean and corn salsa. And don't forget about fruit. What people don't seem to do over the holidays is have a fruit bowl. It seems like once summer's over, the fruit disappears, Chef Jen says. Make the healthy options easy to eat. For example, Chef Jen has noticed that people don't touch clementines when she serves them with the peels on. But when they're pre-peeled, people will eat those like candy, she says. A big thing I tell people to focus on is make the vegetables delicious, Chef Jen says, even if that requires relying on less healthy ingredients like cheese or honey. Even if it's Parmesan cauliflower, and there's a good amount of Parmesan, if you have half a plate of cauliflower, you're still having half a plate of cauliflower, where before it might have been more gravy, another bun, or more mashed potatoes, she says. Other ideas for delicious vegetable dishes include balsamic glazed Brussels sprouts or sautéed carrots in honey and sage. These recipes are included in Chef Jen's cookbook, Cook Smart, Eat Well. Another strategy to encourage more veggies is to serve salad as a first course to set a good foundation before the rest of the meal. Another important thing is to scale back on the booze. Alcoholic drinks can pack a lot of calories, and excessive drinking can contribute to health problems like poor sleep, fatigue, liver disease, and an increased risk of certain cancers. Plus, a hangover is the last thing you want if you're hosting overnight guests or expecting busy mornings with children. If you're looking to limit or eliminate booze this holiday season, but still want to have a fun or fancy drink, you're in luck. There's a wide selection of non-alcoholic beers, wines, and cocktails at grocery and liquor stores. Or make your own mocktails like a champagne fooler, which consists of 2 cups of unsweetened apple juice or apple cider, 1.5 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice, 2 cups of lemon sparkling water, and this is poured into chilled glasses. Another is a cranberry spritzer. This consists of 1 quart of reduced calorie cranberry juice, 1/2 cup of fresh lemon juice, 1 quart of carbonated water, and 1/4 cup of sugar, and 1 cup of raspberry sherbet. Pour this into tall, chilled glasses, and each serving will contain about 100 calories. If you choose to drink alcohol, Chef Jen suggests having a glass of water between alcoholic drinks. This can rehydrate you and also cause increased feelings of fullness, so you don't indulge in quite as many calories. Chef Jen goes on to say that you should enjoy your dessert. Modifying a dessert to make it healthier may just lead you to overindulge. The moment you start making a dessert healthier, you give it a halo effect, and then you'll have a second piece, she says. In terms of calories, fat, and sugar, by the time you have the second piece, you might just as well have had one unaltered one. So enjoy the tradition and nostalgia of certain desserts and dishes, but in moderation. My grandma Welper's apple pie is my favorite, and I don't want her to make that healthy, she says. I don't eat apple pie very often. I want her to make it the way it always is. Substitute or alter when possible. In other cases, there are easy substitutions. For example, Chef Jen provides cocktail meatballs, one of her family's favorites, with a few alterations. She'll use really lean meat and sometimes put in some ground turkey or chicken. This is just a simple manipulation, she says. You might find that other recipes don't require quite as much butter or sugar as a recipe calls for. If you usually mix your green beans with a stick of butter, try half a stick. You probably didn't really need the other half. Remember, eating healthy over the holidays is not about self-denial. In fact, an all-or-nothing mentality may encourage you to overindulge. You may think, I'll start eating healthy after the holidays. It's often more realistic to focus on gradual improvement and celebrate small wins, she says. We think we have to make these dramatic makeovers, and it's not that at all. It's more like, hey, can you throw an extra serving of fruit or veggies into your celebration, she says. And then here's a couple of questions from the Mayo Clinic health letter. The first is, I often tell my grandchildren to put down their phones, but then one of them pointed out how much time I spend on my computer. Is using devices harmful for older adults? American adults over age 60 spend half their leisure time watching TV, using smartphones, tablets, and computers. Don't worry, it's not all bad. Device use is associated with a lower risk of dementia. Older adults who regularly use the internet engage in a variety of cognitive activities, which cuts their risk of dementia in half when compared with those who don't regularly use the internet. Also, there's higher life satisfaction. Internet use is associated with life satisfaction in older adults, allowing for the ability to access important or interesting information, maintain a social network, and communicate with family and friends. There's also a youthful feeling. People who use smartphones regularly say they feel younger than their age. But device use also has a drawback. Some of the downsides include interrupted sleep. The blue light from screens signals your brain to stay awake. Avoid devices an hour before bed. Also, there's neck, shoulder, and back pain. Looking down at devices can cause the head to slant forward instead of lining up over the shoulders. This causes extra pressure on the spine and a hunched upper back. Then there's thumb pain. Tapping and swiping on mobile devices can lead to overuse of the sides of the thumbs. And there's eye strain. Prolonged device use without taking frequent breaks is linked to dry eyes and difficulty seeing items at a distance. Of course, using devices while driving or walking has been linked to traffic collisions, bumps, and falls. Then there's mental health concerns. A need to check notifications frequently can cause reassurance seeking, which is linked to anxiety and depression. Reassurance seeking is a desire to find information to help calm a worry or make a decision. Too much social media use may negatively affect mental health by contributing to feelings of isolation and inadequacy. And then finally, here's a second question, again from the Mayo Clinic health letter. I'm cutting out red meat from my diet. Are eggs a good option for getting protein? It seems like opinion keeps changing on whether they're healthy. Yes, eggs can be a good option, but be sure to consider your overall health if making significant changes to your diet. Adding an egg a day will bring some additional protein to your diet, though probably not equivalent to what you would eat with a serving of red meat. You might think about adding other good protein sources like beans, fish, and nuts. One egg contains 6 grams of protein along with vitamin A, D, and B12. It also delivers choline, a nutrient that is essential in many steps of metabolism. The same egg contains 210 milligrams of cholesterol. But the cholesterol in eggs doesn't raise cholesterol in the same way as do other high cholesterol foods like those in trans fats and saturated fats. The breakfast meats people often eat with eggs, like bacon, sausage, and ham, are high in saturated fat and are more likely to increase disease risk than our eggs. Also consider how the eggs are cooked, especially if they're going to be fried in butter. Consider healthier ways to prepare them, like poaching or boiling. If some oil is needed, use olive, avocado, or canola oil. Eating only the egg whites is a good way to get a protein boost without the cholesterol contained in the yolk. Another option is cholesterol-free egg substitutes. But keep in mind that egg yolks also contain two compounds known to boost eye health, so you'd be missing out on those benefits. And there's a brief discussion of genetic testing for breast cancer, and it points out that how much will the genetic testing cost? The cost of genetic testing has drastically changed over the past 20 years. Hereditary cancer genetic testing is often covered by insurance if someone has a significant personal or family history of cancer. Additionally, genetic testing labs may offer a reduced self-pay option or patient assistance program to make testing more affordable. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.